Welcome to Total Retail Talks, your podcast channel for retail knowledge.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Total Retail Talks. I'm Joe Keenan, the editor-in-chief of Total Retail, and I'm really excited to be joined on this episode by David Spector, who is the co-founder and chairman of Third Love. We are here at Etail West in Palm Springs. David was actually on a panel here this morning, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about that, as well as the Third Love business. So thanks for taking the time to join
me,
David.
Great to be here, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So as I noted, co-founder of Third Love, I'd love for you to give us a little bit of background on the kind of story of the brand, how it got started, and you know, how everything kind of came to be.
So it's a pretty fun story because it's a very typical sort of Silicon Valley story, which is where we're based. We're based in San Francisco, but it's also a very American story too. My wife and I both had jobs at other places. I was at a VC firm. She was at Google. And at the time, I was investing in consumer businesses and thinking about where the world was headed from a brand perspective. And it was obvious in 2012 that there was a shift happening from offline to online. And it was happening quickly. And you could sort of foresee that there would be, in 10 years, a big percentage, much larger than then. I think then it was single digits of online of retail would be online. And so you could kind of see where things were headed, but it was a very, when we were thinking about it from an investment standpoint, it was a very category by category specific question of what categories would make sense in a meaningful way would move online. And so as Heidi and I were sort of talking about this problem, she started to tell me about her challenges bra shopping. And she had recently gone, and I think many husbands have heard this before, and she had recently gone to a Victoria's Secret store as she normally shopped at, and I think she had shopped since she got her first bra. And she was saying to herself, why am I buying a product at the store where I feel no direct connection to the models, to the brand, even to the product? She didn't really like the product. So why is it, she was asking herself and sort of asking me at the same time, Joe, why is it that she is buying a product at this store that she really feels no connection to and doesn't want to be spending money at? And I kept pressing her and she said, it's because it's just habit. It's something that I've always done. They know my size. And I said, well, what if there was actually a brand that was authentic and you felt connected to? By the brand values, by the models, whatever it is that you are connected to a brand by, that had a really great product that actually fit, since you're complaining about how poorly their product fits all the time, and it was an online experience, so you didn't have to go into a store. And this is when we started in 2012 to start dreaming of what Third Love could be, obviously in a very crude form. And on our living room table, and again, this gets back to the American aspect of it, American, you know, business building aspect of it, where we started to say to ourselves, yeah, I think we've got something here. There's a huge white space. There's a, every, you know, 50% of women more or less wear the product, wear the category, and have to buy it, in many cases annually, replace their existing ones. And the market leader is vulnerable in a variety of ways. And so I think we should get started and build something. And so that's what started us on this path. We hired our first member of our team, who's now our co-founder, and her name's Rael, and Rael started designing our product, which is really what we're known for more than anything else. And that started us on this, you know, what's been a 10 plus year journey.
So you mentioned when these conversations were, excuse me, were happening, you were working for a VC firm, I think you said, and your wife was at Google. Did you each have a little bit of digital commerce background, or was this kind of like, let's kind of move along without kind of that experience? What was your background prior to?
As an investor, I definitely spent a lot of time in the ad tech ecosystem.
Yep.
But there's no investor that could say they have a background in anything, right? At best case, investors are sort of coaches on the sidelines. At best case, you know, in generally they're sort of in the stands cheering on companies. Maybe they're president of the fan club, very involved in the business from the fan club perspective, but they're not in the business. Coaches, I think some entrepreneurs would take, would not like me calling their VC investors coaches. It just depends on the relationship. But anyways, so I was interested in it. I knew the market.
Yeah.
Heidi was in the marketing organization at Google. So she was pretty deep in it.
Yeah.
I was prior to joining, prior to being at Sequoia, the VC firm that I was at Google, and my wife and I never overlapped. It just happened to be that we both were there at separate times. And I was involved in the early days of what was referred to as Google Checkout, which was at that time competing very heavily against PayPal. And Google was making a large investment in people and money and a variety of other things into competing with what was PayPal then and what has become PayPal today. That turned into Google Wallet. I was on that team, then I was on the Google Analytics team. So I was always involved in sort of commerce-related things. And then I certainly have an interest in passion in brands and enjoy learning about how brands are made.
So I mentioned at the start, you're the chairman of Third Love and former co-CEO. Tell us a little bit about what your kind of involvement, your day-to-day looks like for the brand today.
Yeah, so I shifted to being chairman as I wanted to go work on a new business in the fintech space, something totally different. Nothing related to what I was doing at Third Love, although it was a problem. The problem that I wanted to solve was something that we struggled with at Third Love. It was a challenge that I had encountered in a pretty meaningful way on the finance side of Third Love. And so that was what I set out to build. It was at a time when interest rates were near zero. And as we started to build this thing out and I recruited a team and started to think about raising debt, it was a credit related product, so I needed to raise debt. Interest rates started creeping up. You know, today's SOFR is 5.25 or something around that. A lot more than it was a year and a half, 2 years ago. So anyways, it ultimately didn't make sense to pursue that business. And now I'm working on a variety of other businesses. I'm investing and working with a bunch of different people on some new concepts. But my day-to-day at Third Love, I'm not day-to-day at all at the company. I am available to help executives at the company who I know all of them. I interview many of them. And I'm an advisor to our CEO. And you know, I have, besides her and really our co-founder, Rael, I have probably the second or third most knowledge of the company historically and in some ways present. And that perspective can hopefully help our company avoid making the same mistake twice.
And knowledge of the market too, right? When you initially kind of laid out the business plan, I'm sure you did a real deep in-depth dive into the market.
Yeah, and that's historical. There are people at our company today that are way smarter than me on where the market is today because they're in it, and I'm not in it at all. But at the same time, I have relationships with various vendors. I have context for sort of contracts that we signed or technology solutions that we've implemented, which was an area of the company that I used to run. And so that is always helpful, and I serve as, you know, the needs of the CEO and the management team when they need advice on things. But I'm not day-to-day at all at the company, and you know, as chairman, I get involved when I'm asked to.
Yeah. So you spoke here at the show, as I mentioned, here at Etail. And one of the things that kind of was the theme of the discussion was balancing staying true to your brand and kind of that heritage that you've built while also expanding that net to a larger audience, particularly younger audience. Tell us a little bit about what that looks like for Third Love. You know, as crazy as it sounds, the brand, you know, has been around for a little bit now. So you've kind of had that established relationship with some of your longer term customers, layering in that customer acquisition piece for potentially even younger shoppers as well.
So Third Love has millions of customers today. So it is a scaled business in a certain way. However, it's also we have to keep reinventing ourselves to make sure that we are constantly staying on top of where the customer is going. So we always say to the team, we can't take our existing customers for granted. Those existing customers, if they like the product, so if they had a good experience, this is a category that has very high retention,
right?
Women.
There's a comfort level, right? If they like the product.
They might hate the brand. Yeah. Look, go back to the story that I told at the beginning of our conversation, Gio. Yeah. Heidi hated the brand. She had no connection to it, right? And yet she still shopped there. So you can hate the brand. Yeah. And Victoria's Secret, in their current form today, has a pretty, you know, negative, people have a pretty negative view on the brand. There's been, you know, songs written about that. And
it's really an interesting dynamic specifically.
Yeah,
but
people, you know, I give them a lot of credit too, because people still spend billions of dollars a year online and at their stores. And so it shows the true staying power of the customer in this category. And so if we have customers that love our product, they will come back and buy it over and over and over again, as long as we keep delivering on that customer promise and the product stays true to what it is. We don't change it or evolve it. What women hate when you change, especially, you know, their bra, make any changes to it. And we hear about it. If you know, our design team will always speak up and they'll be like, we made one tiny change to something and somebody, you know, like three customers notice, like something that you, like, it's so...
You get flooded at the...
Yeah, I mean, it's stuff that you wouldn't even, that nobody should ever realize, like with the way that the pad print is on the thing, or like the hook is moved over, you know, a millimeter, stuff like that. But anyways, your question is really around how do we reach new customers?
Yeah, building that, because, you know, to your point, there's a real level of kind of loyalty to the brands in that category once they
find,
and you know, so getting them into the funnel sooner, obviously your lifetime value then.
Yeah.
You know, so it's talk a little bit about that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why this category is something that a lot of other companies have woken up to, and we have more competition today than we had certainly when we started it, and even 5 years ago, because of the retention and loyalty aspect of it. Which, again, making great product is one of the hardest things that we did at Third Love. And our Rael Cohen deserves all the credit. I mean, she's the genius behind our product creation and runs an incredible team at Third Love that has developed some of the best lingerie products in the world. I mean, women come up to Heidi in airports and come up to Rael in random places and say, oh my God, you're the founder of Third Love. I've seen you. I just love your products. I'm obsessed. So doing that is no small feat, no question. And that, at the end of the day, when you're building a brand, you can build whatever brand you want with whatever celebrity in the front of it and spend millions or billions of dollars on
marketing. Yeah.
If you have crap product, nobody's going to come back. And so you talked about lifetime value, and this category has very high lifetime value and over literally a lifetime if you do it right. So we will spend considerable money to acquire customers up front because we know that, and we know we've got great product to keep them for a long time. Notwithstanding, getting those customers in the door has gotten increasingly harder.
And more expensive, right? You know, getting
them. And I say that Third Love is profitable, but we focus on being profitable. If we weren't profitable, we could spend a lot more, of course. But since we focus on that too, having those two dynamics with an increase in cost, as you said already, Joe, make the environment that we're in increasingly hard, for sure. So I don't know if I have the magic formula for how we find new customers. We have amazing marketers. Amy Carr, who leads our marketing team, she's here at the show today. She's doing brilliant things to try to attract and find new customers in ways that are cost effective and that aren't the obvious ways either. I mean, anybody can go put up a Facebook ad. The dry cleaner down the street can. Facebook's objective is to make it as easy as possible for the common man or woman to put up an ad. And it's gotten even easier over the years to do that, where you don't need agencies actually running the algorithm for you.
Is there innovative new ways that you're thinking about marketing in terms of approaching, you know, to your point, you know, there's so much noise out there and anyone can put up a Facebook ad, thinking about different social channels and, you know, paid search and, the cost per click of that keeps continuing to rise and thinking about all these different acquisition channels, particularly digitally. What does that mean for Third Love? Do you think outside the box and look at other channels, or how do you kind of think about that marketing mix?
I mean, the marketing mix is always going to have four main pillars to it. Email marketing, which includes text, I would say. Social, primarily Facebook and Instagram. Search, and that's paid search, not SEO, separate strategy. And for us, affiliate.
Okay.
So affiliate has become an increasingly important channel for us. And then I would say a fifth area of our mix is sort of miscellaneous, right? Where the spend is just smaller. So CTV, we talked about that today on the panel. CTV is great and it works well. It's just expensive. We're doing more of it. We're increasing our spend in that area. Paid or free influencers.
I was going to say, do influencers kind of fold into social for you, or do you look at it as a separate
It's bucket? A separate channel if it's paid.
Yeah.
And we have people on our team that focus on reaching out to influencers to give them free products, and sometimes paid depending upon the person. We have agencies that can help us with those things too. But at the end of the day, what matters, and the reason why we go after those people, and this is actually why affiliate is so important, is the recommendation from a, you know, quote unquote friend, whether it's somebody you follow on Instagram or it's an affiliate, a blogger or somebody like that, or the New York Times Wirecutter as an example. That's a recommendation, right, from somebody that you trust. You could call her, you can call the Wirecutter a friend. That area for us is super important. We do podcasts in the same way too, and that's a channel that has always been a part of our mix. It goes some years from being very big to smaller, but audio is important. And we only use, we don't just bid out anything in terms of inventory. We go and look for hosts that meet our demographic and that in some cases use the product themselves, so that when they do a read, the read is just from the heart. The read is like, I love this product, I wear it, you guys should too.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think you addressed this, I think it was a question addressed to you on the panel in terms of kind of those paid influencers versus UGC versus, you know, the affinity your customers have for the brand. And once they get attached to a product and a brand that they like, they stick with it in this category. Getting those customers to kind of be advocates for Third Love, is that something that you think could be an opportunity? Sure. So probably you're already laying into?
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, any way that we can get existing customers, influencers, whatever you want to call them, to recommend the product to friends, that's always going to be the best form of acquisition. And in many cases, the least expensive too. Right. So we're doing some strategies that I was just hearing about in the box, where we, you know, we give you a incentive to tell your friends. And we're doing things of that nature that I think could be really powerful to help with referral. And, you know, we have a referral program and are building that out further. But anyways, at the end of the day, those are the best customers, the ones that, you know, a friend or mom or whoever said, this is a great product.
Thinking about the younger consumer that's coming into Third Love, do their expectations of the brand, and maybe it's not even just Third Love, their expectations of retailers and brands in general align with what you're seeing from your long-term customers? There's so much talk about kind of the lack of brand loyalty among younger consumers. Your category may be an outlier there, your product category. Tell us a little bit about the expectations from the younger consumer within your category.
You know, I'm not an expert on that. And I would actually say even the folks that are on our marketing team that are much closer to it than me aren't an expert on it either, because you can't generalize it. It's a difficult question to answer, Joe, because if you have a small niche category, then I think you can. But in our case, we're talking about all women, right? And we span the gamut. Obviously, we're not targeting all, you know, 150 million Americans, clearly, but we span the gamut. We don't, we go from low household income to extremely high. We go from very blue collar to white collar. We go from all different ethnicities. We go from we have big presence in the Midwest, and we're pretty heavily, you know, people know us really well in big cities. So it's not, this isn't just a East Coast, West Coast thing at all either.
Yeah.
So
is there, when you come to an event like this, and there's so much buzz and talk about some of the latest things that are going to disrupt the traditional commerce business. Is there a behavior or a trend or maybe a technology that you're particularly keen on, and, you know, specifically around what it could mean for Third Love and or what it could mean for just digital commerce as a whole?
Well, I talked about this today a little bit, Joe, because if you asked me this question 6 months ago and I was on another panel somewhere else and I actually didn't have much to say about AI then, about its applicability to where we're going. And yeah, there's AI agents for customer service.
Right.
We've actually had that for years, where you know, call it AI or machine learning or whatever, is auto answering tickets. Okay, fine. Now the quality of the written response via chat or email is better now. Okay, great. We've been doing that for a long time, and that's not anything new. But what is new is what happened with the OpenAI announcement with Sora. And I recommend it to the audience today that everyone make sure you go and watch the demo of Sora. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I believe that in the next 1 or 2 years, there'll be a Super Bowl commercial developed, not filmed, because it's not filmed, developed entirely using a Sora-like product, using AI. And again, that's the most expensive 30-second piece of media in the world. And they're going to spend that by not using a camera and not using actors. It's that good. I think that has huge applicability to digital advertising. So what good digital advertisers do, and I think Third Love is in our team is pretty good, is create lots of different pieces of content and throw it at the wall and see what sticks. And now a lot of it's the same video, but iterated on a bunch of different ways. Some have captions on it, some are 10 seconds, some are 30 seconds, some have lots of voice, some have no voice. You film the same thing and cut it up a lot of different ways to see what works too. But not only that, you also have a lot of different pieces of content. You have the woman in the house with her husband there. You have the woman who's out for, you know, nightlife, whatever. I'm making stuff up, but you have a lot of different things. And you throw it at a wall and you see what works. And what we found actually, interestingly, at Third Love is it's oftentimes the thing that you least like, the thing that you least expect as a marketer, as a sort of the owner of the brand, it's somebody that cares about the brand inside the company, that ends up working. You're like, that's what is working. And you're like, yeah, we're spending, you know, $100,000+ on this one ad. And, you know, just we just keep pouring money at it because it just continues to work. And then obviously when it stops working, you turn it off. But you throw lots of things at a wall, lots of different pieces of content. It's not about the algorithm. And you see what sticks. And that, to me, when you talk about AI and its ability to create content at scale very easily, obviously super cheaply. I mean, orders of magnitude cheaper than filming something with actors.
And speed.
And speed. And it does all the editing for you. And then think about this. I don't know if this was clear when I was talking about this today, but imagine a world where that AI is also then hooked up to your data inside of Facebook. So it's receiving it in real time. So it can process things way faster than a human brain can. And can process it in some cases almost in real time. And it takes that data, it takes all those inputs, and then the output is based upon what is working and what's not working, and then all of a sudden you've got a new video that's up instantly.
Yeah.
Like that is a game changer. Yeah, and by the way, that also makes, I'm worried in some ways too, because that makes Facebook particularly, and video ads on Google as well, Google video ads generally, but that makes it way more accessible to everybody. Because at some point, 10 years from now, maybe less, Facebook will have those tools built in. So there'll be there'll be people that won't create content anymore for you. You won't have agencies that do this work.
Yeah.
Because you won't need them. And that means that if everybody can do that and everybody can create content themselves, then it will kind of be commoditized. And that means there'll be way more ads too. So way more competition and prices will go up even further.
Yeah, and our conversation has been largely focused around marketing, but you know, there's obviously efficiency in terms of inventory, supply. You know, there's you know, the use cases are limitless. So you know, that's you know, an exciting thing to think about.
Scary too.
It is. It is a little. A little ominous, but
we're gonna have a lot more competition for our ads. That's the problem.
Yeah, and costs go up. So I do want to take the opportunity to thank David Spector again, who is the chairman and co-founder of Third Love, for joining me here at ETAIL. I really enjoyed the time speaking with you, David.
Thanks, Joe. I really enjoyed it too. Great podcast. And, you know, everybody should check out thirdlove.com. We probably have some promotion going on. We normally would give your audience a code. I don't have one right now. I should have had one available, Joe. But
well, just go check out the site. Right?
Check out the site. Buy from us. You know, let me know if you have any feedback.
Perfect. Well, David, I really have enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for the time. Thanks for listening. For more information on this podcast, please check out our podcast channel page at mytotalretail.com/podcasts for show notes. Total Retail Talks is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Make sure to subscribe on our podcast channel page as well. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a few moments to rate and review this podcast. Thanks, and until next time, this has been Total Retail Talks.